Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.
And we go right across the east coast of Australia through Triple M in Cairns, down into Townsville, down into the beautiful Whitsundays, Mackay, and then across to the Fraser Coast, beautiful Toowoomba into Brisbane. Pardon me. The Goldie, my favourite place in the world, the Gold Coast, beautiful main beach there on the Goldie and Broadbeach.
You like Gold Coast now, do you?
I like the place. Coffs Harbour, Port Macquarie, Newcastle, the beautiful Triple M Central Coast, the mothership, my home ground, Triple M Sydney, and wherever you might be listening, we've got Griffith, we've got Wagga.
Port Macquarie.
Didn't I say Port Macquarie? In their new studios there, Strawny's new studios. Anyway, wherever you are or on the apps, good to have you on board. Thanks to King G. Time to speak to another one of our superstars who we're talking to during the show in the COVID-19 lockdown. This guy's gone berserk on social media saying how good the show is on a Saturday. It's Manly Seagulls legend Jake Trbojevic. Hello, Jake.
How you going, guys?
How are you, mate? How are you coping with lockdown?
Oh, it's been pretty boring. Obviously, you know, love me footy, so I would love to be at training with the lads and out there playing. But I guess it's in the best interest of the players at the moment. And I think it's so exciting that we're going to be back late May. So really looking forward to that.
What have you made, Jake, of how Peter Volandis has handled the whole negotiations around trying to get the game back up and running so far?
I reckon it's been great, Hoops. I think he's really wanted to get it on. It's exciting. It's really refreshing to see him just doing his best, doing everything he can in his power to get the game back on. You know, as I said, we all love playing footy. We all love being at training with our teammates and out there playing on the weekend. And, you know, everyone's really missing it at the moment. So it's great to have a leader like that trying to get the game back on straight away.
How much training have you been doing, mate? And it must be good to have your brother Tom there that you can do a workout with.
Yeah, no, that's definitely helped, Gordy, having someone, I guess, keep you accountable. Desi sent us home with all weights and all sort of cardio equipment. So that's all in the garage. So if he had his way...
Does he have any cameras set up, mate? Some sneaky cameras to make sure you're doing everything?
I wouldn't surprise me if he did, honestly. But it's been all right. Everyone's trying to tick it over, you know. You've done all the hard work in the off-season. You don't want to let it slip, you know, two games in. So hopefully, everyone's sort of, you know, doing their best and we can all come back in pretty good shape.
Is Desi a Zoom man, Jake? Has he got the Zoom app and does he video call and conference call and all that sort of thing?
Yeah, he wanted to do like a Zoom session where we do like roar on a watt bike and we're like, no way, we're copying the screen.
Is he serious?
Yeah, mate, he loves it.
God loves it.
Jake, there's a lot of talk about, people often have the argument about, you know, whether a club needs an ex-club great to coach the club. I think, you know, the case in point here, you know, Des Hasler needs to coach Manly and Manly need Des Hasler, certainly in the next couple of years.
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, ever since he's come back, it's been great. Like, I'd never worked under him before and this is the first time. And he's just such a great leader, like, just someone who works so hard. Like, I've never seen anyone work as hard as him. Any little thing he can do that will help a player out, he'll give it a crack, you know, and he's someone who... we'll sit up all night, you know, thinking of something. And, you know, if he tells you something that he's thought about it 100 times and that there's a good chance of working. So he's a really good leader and really good guy to play under. And it's exciting. So hopefully we can keep improving, you know, the next few years and, just keep getting better.
Hey, Jake, you're at the top of your game. What is something that Desi has helped you with?
He's just being so consistent. Like, just being he keeps everyone so accountable, like, to everything. Like, even if you have a good game, he doesn't let you rest on your laurels. There's always things you can improve on and just ways to continually try and get better. Like, the great thing about Desi is it doesn't matter who you are at the club, whether you're Daly Cherry Evans or have your first day at the club, you know, he's going to tell you, he's going to talk to you, give you ways to improve, and he'll give you a spray and that sort of thing. And it's only going to help you. So I think just in terms of that, just trying to, like, he demands excellence sort of thing at training and on the field. So I think that's definitely helped myself and, like, your attitude and staying in the game and staying in training for, you know, the full time.
The Stewart brothers used to love to wind him up. He told me a story one day. They used to put bananas in his exhaust pipe. who amongst the current playing group, Jake, is there anybody who particularly enjoys trying to have a bit of a laugh with Des?
Well, we're all pretty scared of him. Like, we were all pretty scared of him. But Tom was actually pretty good at getting him. He got him once with he had the empty, so he had like three or four empty coffee cups, and he walked up pretending to give Des a coffee and like dropped them all on him. And he got that scare. So that was pretty funny. But no one's too game to get him. I guess he's got a real aura about him, you know, big presence. So we're still trying to work him out a bit.
How's your golf game going, mate? Are you still able to have a bit of a hit or?
I'm playing quite a bit, but then now you can only play in twos. It's always booked out. It's hard to play. But I guess it's good that we can still get out there and have a hit, because it does get quite you get a bit bored at home and that sort of thing and can't train all the time. So it's good to get out there and I guess clear the mind. Yeah.
I'll tell you who's been absolutely relentless on the golf course, Ben Eichen.
Hmm?
Oh, yeah. In twos and social distancing and making sure that everything's above board in terms of the health and safety protocols. But he's just, yeah, it's overtime on the golf course.
He goes all right, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's single.
He doesn't hit it too bad. He plays at Indooroopilly just down the road. I saw him the other day lining up about 6 o'clock in the morning to get a coffee dressed in the golf gear. I'm like, well, what are you doing? Standing there like Milhouse out of The Simpsons. Hey, but Jakey, I'll tell you what, mate. Mate, I watched you doing the lie detector test with those idiots on Fox with Fletch and Arnie. Mate, what are you doing? Do you know what? You're too nice a guy, mate. You got to say no to those two.
I know. It turned out, in the end, we were trying to say the answers that we thought they wanted so we didn't get zapped on the back.
You can't have to. But that's what I'm saying, mate. You're too nice to them.
Yeah. Oh, they got us a beauty. They had no idea we were about to get zapped. That was funny.
Yeah, no, it was good stuff, mate.
Jake, what about, obviously now we have a starting date for the NRL, May 28, and we know now that Origin will be at the back end of the season after everything else is said and done. How do you feel about that?
Oh, it's exciting. I think it's just great. It's great that footy's coming back, and I guess State of Origin is like the showpiece event of, you know, rugby league inside Australia. So that's exciting that it's on. It doesn't really matter when it is. It's just great that it's on. Obviously, it would have been devastating if we couldn't play it this year, so I think it's really exciting. And I guess being at the back end of the year, hopefully all the restrictions can get lifted and it can be hopefully have crowds there and it can be a great event again.
All right, mate. Well, look, we're having a little bit of trouble hearing you, so we might leave it there. And we wish you all the best for the season when we do get back out there, May 28. And no doubt we'll catch up again in the course of the year.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Good on you, Jake. Jack Trebojevic there. I apologise there for the quality of that line, but it's good to get him on.
It was cool. Hey, Maureen, can I give a shout-out, mate? Obviously, you know, in these times and people are, you know, having anniversaries and today's Anzac Day, and you feel sorry for all those diggers that, you know, probably would have walked to their RSL and, you know, had a chat to all their old mates or whatever. So a shout out to all those diggers out there, but people that are having their birthdays as well, you know. I've got a good mate, Matty Dyer. He's actually turning 50 today.
Smoker. Is that I've heard you talk about is he the smoker? The meat smoke?
Yeah. He smokes. Cook. Yeah. Cooks.
What does he do?
A lot of meat. He cooks a lot of meat, but it's his birthday today. So, Matty, he'd be probably at home now and he'd be stoking one of those big Weber things. I don't know what you call them. Like, you know, they slow roasted or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they're good, 14 those hours.
They're
awesome.
Yeah,
like the brisket and that. Yeah. Mate, he's a great cook, but he's turning 50 today. So, happy birthday, Matty. I'll be here for you when I get home.
Well said, Gordy. Hey, speaking of good cooks, mate, that recipe that you delivered last week, mate, that took off. I had people asking me
but about that's true. That's the only reason why my wife used to come over when we used to live in different houses. She'd only come over if I'd cooked that meal, so I had to be good at it.
She came over and you set a trap. Since.
Well, it was better than the first restaurant I ever took her to.
Mm-hmm.
It was Macca's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 100%.
Because he's probably got a VIP card.
I've got a gold card. Oh, well.
All right.
Things you do, Maureen.
Yeah.
You know what? You rub off on me sometimes, okay? Mm-hmm. I thought, how do I get out with the cheapest meal? I got this Macca's gold card. Yeah. I won't go through the drive-thru. I'll get out and walk in and pretend that I paid for it. And I stole the paper like you on the way out of the adult.
Righto. Okay, look, we're going to take a break, you clowns, and we're going to come back. We're going to replay that Peter Volandi's interview that we did earlier on. And as well as all that, we've got a new segment called NRL Grand Finals We Never Talk About. And we've picked one out. We're going to talk about it next as Triple M rocks the footy.
The Triple M Saturday Sin Bin for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
Welcome back to the Saturday Sin Bin. Thanks to our mates and all our sponsors who are on board with us in 2020, Ream and, of course, Macca's and, of course, King G. We love having you guys on board. Gordy Tallis, Hoops and Maroon. Now, We thought we'd do a little segment here called Grand Finals We Never Talk About, because there's those obvious ones, Hoops, that we always talk about, be it the 1989 Grand Final or the Grand Final in 2015 where the Cowboys beat the Broncos. But there are a lot of Grand Finals, one particular that you love, that we never seem to get around to. The first one I thought of was when the ARL and the Super League came back together in 1998, and the Grand Final was at the SFS. It was the last one too at the SFS, I think, and it was the Brisbane Broncos versus the Canterbury Bulldogs. A lot of people would suggest that the Doggies played their Grand Final, getting to the Grand Final, but the Broncos won the 98 Grand Final. Gordy, tell us, what are your thoughts and your memories on that?
The 98 Grand Final, the Dogs, I remember the Dogs making a big run late. I think that's when Parramatta had that 18-0.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was a week before, and then the Dogs were just giant killers. They just kept on coming along, and they got the momentum, and they had a great trainer in Billy Johnson. They had a really tough – the Dogs have always had a really tough side, but had that tough, gritty side that would fight over a bone with not much meat on it. And then they were coming. They had, you know, some really good young forwards like Stephen Price and all those guys coming through. They had Dean Pay, Jason Smith, and all, or they had already left. And then I just knew that the Dogs were a tough side. Darren Britt was in there, and it was the last day Grand Final. That's one thing that I do remember as well. In Brisbane, we had to be up, and Elf and Kevy Walters had a had a great ability to motivate us at certain times. And I remember when the Dogs were making that run. You know, they'd walk into training and go, oh, geez, wouldn't it be good playing behind that Dogs forward pack, you know, like, and all this kind of stuff. And they just kept on teasing us to a point when probably when we got to the Grand Final, I think the Dogs had run out of a bit of steam. I think we ended up beating them. What was the score, 38 points to 12 or something?
Yeah, it was a bit of a carve-up, yeah.
Yeah, well, but they were ahead at halftime.
Mm.
And every other game, they come from behind to win, and I think it was – sort of unusual for the Dogs to be up at half time, but once we clicked in the gear, I won the Clive Churchill medal that day.
Yep.
And I won't give it to him.
You kicked the door off the hinges and tore him apart that day.
But the best player for Brisbane Broncos that day was Tony Carroll, by far. And Tony, to this day, still reminds me that it's his medal, but he's not going to get it. So I do believe that it's that he was the best player.
Mate, you're being modest. I'm not going to give it back. I remember that game. You single-handedly, especially given the fact that, as you touched on, Canterbury were ahead at halftime, it seemed as though that game to you meant a hell of a lot personally. Because was it because it was back being a United competition and that the game had been a bit fractured previously, or?
Well, we didn't get the recognition that we thought we should have, and probably now looking back on hindsight, you know, the ARL was the competition, was the one that started back in 1908. We left to go play Super League. So when Newcastle won, that sort of was the hope that the game needed. That's the buzz, that's the injection of faith that the game needed. And then we were playing for Queensland, that didn't get recognised. We'd play for Australia, that didn't get recognised. So when we come back together, for one, we had to beat Newcastle. I think we beat them in about round 9, from memory. And Wayne Bennett is not one of those guys that builds up club games. He just, you know, sometimes he'd walk in and it'd be a really big game and, you know, he'd be playing Manly at Manly, whatever, then he'd have a video session before and he'd go, oh, I'm not worried about this, boys. Don't worry about showing them the tape, Craig Bellamy or whatever. Boys, today it's about you guys. But I remember him building us up for that Newcastle game. And we got to Newcastle. It was a wet, cold, miserable night, which probably played into their hands, and we won that game. And then when it came to the Grand Final, we just knew that we had to win it to sort of show that we were, I think, the premier side the year before as well.
The benchmark team, yeah. What did Wayne say? We touched on the fact the Bulldogs were ahead at halftime. What did he say in that halftime?
Oh, mate, Wayne Bennett, through his whole career, has two speeches. He says he's got a losing one and a winning one. That's it, and it's very consistent. But the losing one, he'd be walking around go, hey, guys, what did we say we were going to do before the game? And it might have been kick chase. He'll pick one or two things out. But, boys, if we tidy this up, Gordon, can you play better than that, mate? Can your marker defence or whatever it is, hey, guys, can you kick Chase better? And he just put it back on you guys. And if you're winning, he would come up to you and say, hey, guys, are you prepared to go out there and work as hard as you did in the first half? And he looks at you and everybody ends up got to say yes. Hey, guys, you want to give away, you know, this lead or this game or whatever? And he just asks you questions. And sometimes he'll point at you, hey, Gordon, are you going to have a go today? Are you going to play or are you going to let your teammates down? You know, or he'd go in, he'd pick a big player and he'd get into the young kids or whatever. And it was a really simple message
all the time. Who got the Clive Churchill medal in the aftermath celebrations after the grand final?
Do you know what? That day, I just remember the next day we were sitting, because we used to train at Red Hill, and we were just sitting on our training fields. Like, there was a barbecue area, so we just sort of lit a fire and we'd sort of celebrated through the night. We're still sitting there the next day about lunchtime, and Wayne Bennett went home and he'd come back about, just after lunch, and we're all sitting there and the club said, boys, go inside, have a shower and, you know, get some clean clothes on. The media's coming and that. So we just went and had to do some interviews, and then we're sitting around and everybody had to tell a story sort of through the year. And Wayne Bennett stood up, and we had this little podium, and Wayne Bennett stood up on a podium and had a swig of beer. And you know how he doesn't drink or whatever, yeah, but I just remember totally, that. Yeah, so like Wayne Bennett never had a drink in his life, and he got up there and he goes, guys, you're a very special group of guys. He opened up a bottle of 4X and he had a sip, and it was a horrible attempt of trying to scull a beer. But do you know what? Mate, we just all erupted. You know, yep. So then if he would have got picked up on the way home, he would have smelt like alcohol, because everybody started sharing him with their beers and Kahlua's or whatever they were drinking at the time, and he would have had alcohol on his breath for the first time ever.
Great story, Gordy. Now, the next grand final we want to talk about is one you raised earlier in the office when we were getting ready to come on air, Hoops, and it's a grand final that never gets talked about. It's the last time the Doggies won a grand final, when they beat the Roosters in 2004.
Yeah, it was a cracking game. I remember the night, it was out at ANZ Stadium. And again, similar to what Gordon just touched on there, where that particular competition in 1998 for the Broncos meant so much, because it was back, the NRL was back as a united front competition. For the Bulldogs in 2004, there was a massive element of unfinished business, because they got rubbed out for the salary cap scandal in 2002. And were relegated to last on the competition ladder. And, you know, essentially they were hit with a spoon as a result of the punishments. And as a result, you know, it was really tough to take for them that season, because they'd been the benchmark side. Steve Fokes was the coach and they had Mark O'Mealy and Willie Mason. And it was a really hard-nosed, tough, champion team of the time. And they just played a really, it was a brutal brand of footy. And so in 2004, the Roosters had been the team that had won the competition in 02 when the Bulldogs were eliminated from proceedings. And so there was a wonderful rivalry between those two teams that had built up over those years. And that particular game, there were moments. I remember Anthony Minicello scored a fantastic try after Anthony Tupou had made a terrific break. And you felt as though the momentum was really with the Roosters at that time, and that perhaps they were going to get over the Dogs. But Canterbury being Canterbury, they bulldozed their way back into proceedings, and they were able to win that night. It meant a hell of a lot to that playing group. As I touched on, it was the likes of Agar O'Mealy, Willie Mason, Bobcat Ryan, Braithen Astor was there, Brent Sherwin was there.
Was that the one when Pricey was injured or suspended?
Yeah, he was. He, you're right, Gordon. He was fantastic for them for the entire year.
Yeah,
and he missed the grand final. And that's the one where Jonathan Thurston famously gave Steve Price his grand final ring. Yeah, really nice gesture.
Mate, that's an amazing moment for Thurston. You know, like, you talk about him giving away his headgear.
Yeah.
For him to walk over then, and he was a big part of it, and he was starting his career, and you don't know whether you're ever going to play in another one, because it took him a long time to win one.
Yep.
You know, to win another one, and the player that he was, it's the dogs are always tough. The Dogs were, I remember their old CEO, his name was Bobby Hagan. He played with my dad a bit. They went over to England to play together, and you know, he'd always ring me when the Dogs, he goes, mate, we're coming to town and the boys have been eating nails. Like, he'd say something like, he goes, mate, they've been eating nails, lead-headed nails, just for you. And I'd sort of sit there and go, oh, but that's all, but like, they were tough. They always had those guys, and They probably didn't play a lot of rep footy, and I think Kenty was talking about Dean Pay, you know, like, but he was a guy, they picked him for country, and he beat up City. And then they picked him for State of Origin, he beat up Queensland, and he went on a tour in 94. But they had guys like that, that, you know, that that were equal to Dean Pay, but didn't wear the other coloured jerseys, you know, didn't wear the rep jerseys, but they were just as tough and good, you know?
It's significant in another way, that grand final, because you look at the history of the Bulldogs, whether they won or lost, they were in grand finals through the 80s, through the 90s,
But I think they've won, nearly in every decade, haven't they?
Well, the significant, they have certainly won in the 80s and the 90s, but they were in like 94, 95, 98. Then into 2004, they make the grand final and win the grand final. They haven't been in a grand final for 16 years by their own high standards, Hoops. It's a long time.
Didn't they play Melbourne?
I beg your pardon, they did in 2012.
The ear biter.
Yeah, that's right. But by their own standards, that's 16 years since they've won a premiership. They were also in the 2014 grand final.
Souths beat them in 2014 as well, when Jimmy Graham and Sammy Burgess had that famous clash.
So that's good research, Marie.
The point I was trying to make is...
What was the point?
The point is that they haven't sort of won a premiership for 16 years, which
they
by their standards...
You're right. By their standards, that is quite a lengthy title drought. It's similar with the Broncos at the moment. You know, the Broncos have been such a successful club. They're in their longest title drought in the history of the Brisbane Broncos. And it's not that long. You've only got to go back to 2006.
Don't be hard on them, because as soon as we talk about them, they say, I don't like them. Well, I'm serious, mate. But I love the club. But it's sort of strange, Brisbane, that and the Dogs and those big, rich clubs that have had so much success. And it's sort of like it's bred in. It's in their fabric.
DNA.
That they play finals footy and they play... You know, and they have a Terry Lamb or they have an Alan Langer and they, you know, because they have the pick of all the great players, and it's just, you know, those two clubs. But it shows that the salary cap's working, I think, most of the time, and the talent's evenly spread.
You touched on Terry Lamb, Gordy. That was another great grand final, 1995.
Yeah.
The Dogs upset.
Oh, they come from nowhere.
Manly
then.
Were a benchmark side. Bozo had them flying.
Do you know what? That's a game that I regret, Hoops, to bring 95.
Yeah.
They beat us in the first round of the semifinals.
Okay.
And they scored. They beat the Dragons. And I'm not saying that we would have went on, because then they crushed the Raiders and
they
beat the Broncos. Dean Pay hit Lazo right underneath the ribs on about the 40-meter line, and Lazo did his rib cartilage, and it stopped Brisbane's momentum. Yeah, it was, mate, it was one of those bloody years. But like them, we should have won that game. That's a game at the Dragons, and I think if you talk to any other player that, you know, when you think about, because, like, mate, we were sort of on a roll as well, and it was a tough game, and we always had tough ding-dong battles with the Dogs. And that was a game that I regret, because I thought that if we won that, I'm not saying we would have went all the way, because it was a tough, and I think Manly was still there as well. Manly, Brisbane and Canberra.
Mm.
But, you know, we would have loved to have had a chance.
Well, Barr was a hell of a player, wasn't he, Gordy? Yeah.
Mate, he was on Fox the other day, and his trophies, he's got like 15 Dally M bloody 5/8 of the year. Mate, when I was at the Dragons and we were young, Brian Smith would cut up some footage, and they cut up some footage. He said, look at this guy. And I sort of remember, he goes, he's got a gold Mercedes in his garage. I'm thinking, does he? He's got this. He's played for his country. He's done this. He's won grand final. And it just showed, you know, 3 minutes of Terry Lamb competing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they showed the scoreboard, and the Dogs were winning by like 25 points or something like that. And how hard he competed. Like, he was... in every picture, when the other team was scoring, he's there trying to make a tackle. When his side was scoring, he's the bloke closest to the bloke scoring a try, just backing up. He was an unbelievable competitor.
Support player, great support player.
Oh, mate, unbelievable. And then, do you know what? Tough. And then when they asked him, mate, what makes you so good? He goes, I just jog down the middle of the field, just in case. And Johnny Lang had a great saying, and I learned it when I went to South with him. He goes, Gordon, the great players go just in case they're needed, not because they're needed. And it's a really good line, and that was Terry Lamb.
Well, boys, we were going to do a grand final that never gets talked about.
Yours?
Because probably...
The under-16s? Come on, bring it up. I know you want to.
My last
two
grand
minutes.
Final with the Waterloo Waratahs, I was in jumper number 19. We played Zetland. A couple of kids were out sick. I thought one kid had the mumps. I thought I'd get a run today for sure, but no, I wasn't to be. But still,
you
at
got
the
runs
at the presentation at Sanssouci at the end of the year, I was still given a Waterloo Waratahs tracksuit top. and a very small little pennant, little ribbon thing, but not a trophy. But anyway.
That's all right, mate. You got a pennant.
I did,
How did you used to go with the bifocals in your playing days? What would you do there?
Oh, well, look, I'd just leave them. I'd wear them out there on the wing.
Would you?
At Waterloo Oval, at Waterloo Stadium. I'd be out there on the wing, and if I saw anything coming, I'd just, like, because back in those days, they were much more sturdy. I'd just take them off and hurl them over the sideline at the touch judgment. That's a long time ago. The grand final I wanted to talk about was 2008, 40-0 Manly, but we'll save that up for next week because we want to take a break and come back and replay our hard-hitting interview with Peter Volandis on the Saturday Sin Bin at Triple M.
Triple M, Saturday Sin Bin for King G, where comfort is king. Triple M rocks footy.
The Saturday Sin Bin, that's just about it for us on Triple M with Hoops, Gordy and Maroon. Before we go, Gordy did a recipe last week for spaghetti bolognese. Here's it, it is if you missed it.
This week is pretty simple and everybody loves it. It's spaghetti bol. Right, so you've got to go to a good butcher and get Italian sausage and you get about a kilo of it. Get it out of the skin, so you put it on the water, you slice it. Put it in your pan with some onion, with some olive oil and some carrot. Let it simmer for about, I'd say half an hour to about 40 minutes. And you put in some tomatoes, fresh tomatoes, or you get the tin tomatoes, peeled, crushed tomatoes. And I put about three or four tins of that in. And I just let it simmer all day for about four or five hours. And right at the end, I put in a really good sauce.
That's a lot of tomatoes goes in there, Gordy, tell us. But it was a wonderful recipe. Stack of emails and tweets. And we even had a call to our feedback line on 133353. Here it is.
Yeah, hi, guys. Justin's my name. I'm just calling the feedback line because last week I just happened to be listening when one of your guys, Gavin, is it Gavin Tallis, gave over a recipe for spaghetti bolognese. And I was listening in the car and it had Italian sausage. And I love Italian sausage. So I got the recipe and I went home and made it. My God, I've been as sick as a dog all week. Coronavirus is the least of my problems. Whatever you do, get that guy to stick to what he knows. Thanks, bye.
Yes, well, as they say, stay in your lane, Gordy.
What was that chap's name?
I don't know what his name was. Justin.
I'll tell you what.
Justin from Little Bay.
Yeah, he had an eerie similarity with somebody else who's the captain of this program.
Oh, hang on. Kent. Paul Kent's the captain.
No, that was you impersonating. That was you impersonating.
Before we go anywhere, Gordon, do you have another recipe for today?
Well, do you know what? Let's do a roast.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. My favourite is roast lamb. What I do is I got a big pot. I cut up, say, three onions. It all depends how big your lamb is, how many people you're going to eat. But I sit them on the bottom of the pan with a little bit of stock. And I do a pretty much a whole garlic. It all depends, and then that's there. I put the lamb on top of that so it doesn't sit on the pan. I put some holes in it. I push in the rosemary, the fresh rosemary, and I cook that for. Well, obviously it all depends how long it is and how heavy it is, but you cook that as low and as slow as you can. And the veggies, I normally just do, this is a staple. You know, the sweet potato, pumpkin, carrot. And I cover those with a little bit of honey as well,
so they caramelize.
So and then you put all the herbs. So you put the rest of the rosemary, salt and pepper, just olive oil and honey on your veggies, and a bit of honey on your lamb, which gives it that beautiful little sort of caramelization right at the end with a bit of salt and pepper.
Sounds outstanding, Gordy.
Beautiful, Gordy. Well, we'll have a crack at that.
You're a regular master chef. Great day to do it as well, Gordon, isn't it? Being Anzac Day.
Yeah, mate, Anzac Day, and to all those diggers, Hoops, I know. Mate, I do miss my footy and the respect that the Roosters and St. George have shown, by playing on that day and, the last post and all that. So all those old diggers that are sitting there that normally would have a beer with their mates and the women as well, thank you so much for doing what you did for us.
Yeah, well said, Gordy. And look, mate, you have a great week. We'll catch you on Fox League.
Will do.
You too, Hoops.
Thanks, Maroon.
We'll see you next week. Next Saturday from noon, it's the Saturday Sin Bin. And coming up next, a cracker of a game, Anzac Day game from last year. It's the Roosters versus St. George Illawarra Dragons. It's always a good game. I'm going to replay it for you here at Triple M.
Triple M rocks the NRL 24/7 through the Triple M app. Thanks to Ream. Steady, hot and strong. Install a Ream.